Welcome to Your Podcast or Mine, where the creative minds behind the mic are interviewed. Now, let's get things started. Here's your host, Sherry.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of Your Podcast or Mine. On this episode, I'm speaking with Craig Kringle, the creative mind behind Weird Christmas. So thank you for joining me on the show tonight, Craig. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
I want to call you Chris so bad because of Kringle.
That happens a lot, and, actually. I get a lot of emails. Yeah.
And I'm sure Kringle isn't really your last name, so that's why I kind of like I did the air. Air apostrophes around it. So.
Yeah. Yep. No, I still get questions. People ask me, like, is that really your last name? Which always amazes me. People actually even take for a second. They're like, is that really it? Like, oh, no, not at all.
I'm the third cousin twice removed.
Right. Exactly.
So why don't you start with a brief description of the podcast?
Sure. It started when I have a couple blogs that and sort of social media things that share strange old vintage Christmas cards. And they go year round and but really speed up during the winter, of course. And but I started to just because of that get really into a whole lot of old Christmas traditions and history about different cultures and strange ways that our traditions used to be very different. And I would start to share that too. And it just got a lot of people interested and asked me more and more questions, which meant that I had to do more research. And by the time, you know, a few years ago, I had enough background and interest and I decided one night, why don't I try a podcast? And I thought that would also be a good way to get in touch with some writers who I'd thought would be fun to talk to. And if I could say I had a podcast, then it'd be a great excuse to get to talk to all these people. So literally 1 year, I kind of threw it together at the last minute and all I had was a cheap little like headset microphone. And it sounded really bad that first year, but it was fun. And we talked about strange Christmas music, about Christmas history. I talked to a philosopher who'd written a book all about what he called the seven myths of Christmas, or things that we do wrong, or ideas we have about Christmas that are wrong. And it was a blast. And so that first sort of experiment year turned into something that really took off the next year. And yeah, so this year and last year, it's been bigger and bigger. And I now occasionally people even ask to be on the show rather than me go trying to hunt people down. So it's really kind of cool. But that's what it's all about, is odd ways to look at Christmas. We're kind of irreverent, but I certainly don't hate Christmas, which is what sometimes people think if I call it Weird Christmas. But no, it's just really more about the unusual side, things that most people in the U.S. and the U.K. just don't really know very well about other parts of the world. So even though I present it as Weird Christmas, it's not totally irreverent. Like, we're really trying to talk about other cultures, traditions. Like, one of my favorite shows this year was about the Icelandic Yule lads, who it's sort of like instead of one Santa Claus, they have 13. And it's a fun tradition, but it's definitely to U.S. ears, it's very weird. So, but yeah, that's the idea of the show.
Yeah, I was going to mention that one. That was one of my favorite shows, too. And if people hadn't heard it, there's also the Yule Cat, too, that's also mm-hmm. mentioned. So that I found to be really cool, too. But cool. So is Weird Christmas a seasonal podcast, or do you do this year-round?
I've done a couple at other times. Like, I would do a little Halloween or Thanksgiving thing every now and then. Mainly it's all been from Thanksgiving to December, but this year I decided to try something a little different, that I had enough listeners that I wanted to see if I had enough interest to do a year-round show with one a month. But those monthly ones would be through Patreon, just to see if I could get, I mean, do you know what Patreon is? Sometimes some people do,
yes.
Some people don't. Okay.
Yes, I'm aware of it. Yeah.
Okay, good. So yeah, Patreon is like a monthly thing. You can pay a monthly fee to get extra content. So that's my little experiment this year to see if there's enough interest. For $2 a month, you can listen to a podcast every year that, or every month, that'll have something to do with Christmas, but then also about strange holidays during the year. So like for August this year. The first one I did, I actually talked to someone who did who handles National Mustard Day every year, and there's an actual mustard museum in Wisconsin, and he is a fanatic about mustard, and hosts National Mustard Day, and there's a parade in his town for National Mustard Day, and all sorts of things like that. So yeah, so I started to look for the definitely unusual and niche sorts of holidays that I could find, but that's what I'm trying this year. But the hard part is getting a little bit of Christmas stuff in there too every single month. So, but yeah, that's what I'm trying this time. See how that works.
Well, the mustard month and the mustard museum sounds interesting. Full disclaimer: I hate mustard, so you know, I'm sorry to all of the mustard lovers out there. You know, if you feel like I'm discriminating against it, but I'm not a big fan. However, it does intrigue me. My sister lives in Wisconsin, so I'll have to see if she knows where it is, so that we can take a look. Yeah, I mean, and you know, they're the land of like bratwurst, so there you go, mustard and bratwurst. Okay. So
indeed.
Yeah, yum. So, what compelled you to start podcasting besides the feedback from your listeners? Was broadcasting in your genetics? Had you done it before, or was it something that you thought that it might be a general like progression into?
I had listened to a lot, and I'd always been fascinated with radio, kind of underground radio. My dad, I remember, bought me a shortwave radio when I was a kid because he was really into it. And I had more fun hunting down just the strangest, most, you know, most unusual niche shows, or like news about, you know, one part of England, but presented out of Thailand or something, you know, and on shortwave, you could find all kinds of crazy stuff like that. And it was always just a huge thrill. So when the internet came around, one thing I started looking for, even we're talking like late 90s, I would always hunt down those odd shows that people were just sort of putting out. And of course, all kinds of stuff, you know, popped up with YouTube and all kinds of things like that. But I had never really thought about getting into it. Like, I was never particularly good at broadcasting or had gone into broadcasting, but I'd always been, you know, written things and had the blog and had all sorts of just ideas. But then once I tried it, I realized it was pretty fun. And I really enjoyed the process of editing and trying to make things sound good. And it turned out to be something that I really enjoyed. So I have the weird Christmas one, but a friend of mine wanted to start another one that we started. I won't plug it here necessarily, but it's beyond niche. Niche of a niche of a niche kind of thing. But those are the kind of shows that I really like, you know, where it's a small group of people who are really committed to some strange idea and really work really hard to make it as good as they can. So yeah, I've always been fascinated by that show, that kind of format, but I never really thought about being, you know, the guy on the microphone or anything.
Yeah, well, you can absolutely plug the other show that you're on. That's absolutely fine. I mean, if you if you're compelled to later, go ahead.
Sure, my partner will appreciate it. So it's called Rereading Wolf, and there's a science fiction author named Gene Wolfe, who just died recently. But he's incredibly well known by all science fiction writers, and has won like National Fantasy Awards or Grandmaster Awards. But he's really hard to read, and so a lot of people haven't. So what we did was we decided we wanted to start a podcast where we just go chapter by chapter through some of his most famous books and just tear them apart. So we'll spend 2 to 3 hours on one chapter of one book. And every episode is one chapter, and just go as deep as we can into every single thing. So like I said, niche of a niche, even casual genius readers would not want to listen to this show. So,
how do you find the music that you play, in the beginning and the end of the show?
That was actually a surprise to me too. So before I had gotten into sharing the cards, I've always been a big Christmas fan. I like Christmas a whole lot, but I was never super into finding Christmas music. And although I like Christmas music, I was never all that, you know, I wasn't one of those obsessive people who, you know, listens to it all year long or has to have it on constantly. But then once I started getting into this little subculture of people who truly are Christmas obsessed, Christmas music is probably the biggest part of it. And there are hundreds of people who spend all year hunting down the strangest or most little known piece of Christmas music that they can find, either new or old, and then making Christmas mixes of them when it comes around, when Christmas comes around. And there's actually a documentary about that sort of world that's out. Was one of the first people I got to interview by Mitchell Kezin. But the movie's called Jingle Bell Rocks. But what it does is it follows these people who are just obsessed with Christmas music and finding, you know, good Christmas music or finding the most odd novelty songs you can find. And it's huge. And they know more than I'll ever know about music. I mean, we're talking about guys who literally have rooms filled with nothing but Christmas LPs. You know, just insane amounts of stuff. But I've met so many of them now through the show that I get fed so much Christmas music that it's not hard to find. And I still occasionally will do a show that's just kind of like a little clip show of some of the best parts. And in fact, I don't know if you remember a show called The Annoying Music Show that would show up on NPR every now and then. It was a short little thing that they would kind of do between shows sometimes. But it was this guy who would just hunt down annoying music, like awful, terrible, annoying music, and he'd play little clips of it. And that's what I tried to copy with my show, was just to find some strange pieces of Christmas music all around a particular theme and string them together. So there'll be a couple of more of those coming out this year later on, too. Find it. I follow them and I hunt it down. Yeah.
It kind of sounds like very Dr. Demento-ish, you know. So
yeah, it is. Yep, it definitely is. So,
that's
he's in that documentary, in fact.
Yeah. Well, he should be. He's the king of all weird music. So. You did mention the Patreon. So, what kind of benefits do you offer besides the extra shows for those who join?
The big thing is that I try to send out postcards all year long, like reproductions of some of the actual strange old Victorian postcards. Since that's still sort of the center of everything I do, just, you know, posting those things on I queue a ton of them up every year, hundreds, if not thousands, and, you know, just get those going all year long. And so I know so many people find me because of that, that's the big thing I wanted to offer, was a chance to get actual, I can't afford the actual cards, but I can reprint them in as good as quality as I possibly can. But send those out all year. I have made little videos and, you know, the little kinds of normal behind the scenes things that you can get on Patreon too. And longer versions of the interviews. You know, I have to admit, I'm by no means a professional interviewer. So when I talk to people, I usually just ramble and get to know them a little bit, and we kind of just chat for a while, and then I'll go back and cut it all up and make it sound, you know, good later. But I, in the process of doing that, I leave a lot of stuff out, and so I'll put the full versions of those up on there as well. But I think probably the postcards are the biggest benefit. I did say that if someone joined up for $100 a month, that I would handle all of their Christmas cards for them if they just sent me the addresses, but I haven't gotten any takers on that one yet. So I'm kind of scared that I will actually get a taker on that, because then I'd actually have to do it, and that sounds like it would be.
Yeah, and they'd have a list that's like ridiculous, probably.
Exactly. And they probably deserve it if they were spending that much money. So, yeah, this is really a joke. Right. It just seemed fun to put up there in the little promo video you have to make. But, yeah, so now I wonder every now and then, should I take that off? Because I'm afraid somebody might actually do it, and I don't know what I do. So
that's funny. So I recently heard a podcast that you just released regarding flash fiction. So what was that about? Did you have listeners submit their stories and you chose one, or was it a vote that was made, or what was that process?
That was totally last year, me doing something on a whim. I said, you know, it'd be great to have a show just of short fiction, because I was looking for myself, and there are short story collections out there of Christmas themed, you know, stories in different ways. But I hadn't found a whole lot of flash fiction, especially not stuff that wasn't super sentimental or sappy. And I kind of did this because I was like, you know, I want to read something, and you know, I want to read fiction like I want to read, that's strange and that is all maybe a little dark. And figured, well, why not make my own? So I just put together a little contest and got my wife to agree to let me have $75 to give, for $50 for first place and $25 for second. And I put it out on the web and put it in a handful of writing contest sites, just submitted it to various places. And it went further than I thought it would. In the first year, I got over 200 entries, and, you know, a ton of them were really, really good. I mean, way better than I thought I did. When I did it, I thought, okay, maybe I'll get five things that are really good. And, you know, just to keep the show under an hour, I ended up only using 14 stories, but I still had a ton that I thought would be good. So this year came around and I tried it again. I did the same thing, and I figured I'd get a few more, but I got close to 650 entries by the time was done. Yeah, because it ended up on a bunch of sort of clearinghouse sort of websites where writing contests. And I, one thing, when I first started looking into this, I'm like, wow, a lot of these things charge like $1 or $2 to enter. And I'm like, I'm not going to do that. That seems like money grubbing. I kind of see why now, because you get a ton of stuff that someone obviously just, you know, saw the thing and was like, I'll try something. And they didn't even read the entry. I mean, not a ton, I shouldn't say a ton, but still not going to do it next year. But yeah, so about 650, which took me a long time to not just read through, but actually decide, because I had so much good stuff. I mean, the first sort of final pool of things, all of which I would have been happy putting on the show, I had like 160 stories. So
Wow. There's
no way I'm doing that. And so I got my wife and two friends, and we sat down and read through them all and argued about what should go on. And really, in the end, apart from the winners, the rest of the ones that the top two winners, the ones that went on the show, we were really sort of, you know, lucky enough to have a situation where we could pick for variety instead of just, you know, well, which ones are actually good. You know, we had the tons that were actually good. So yeah, it was great. You know, I had to turn down some things this year that might have won last year. It was amazing. So I am thrilled. So the second one, yeah, just went up. Or it's up now. It will be up by the time anyone hears this. And this one has 14, actually 15 stories, all short, 350 words or less, but everything from horror to strange to, you know, what actually I guess gets called weird fiction, little science fiction thrown in there, but basically anything about Christmas that goes in some direction you don't expect. And it's honestly been my favorite thing to do these last 2 years, way better than me, because I'm not writing it. So it's, you know, all sorts of actually talented people who are writing stories about Christmas. Everything from, I'm trying to think a way to give, to tell things, tell what they are without giving them away. But there's like evil Santa stories. There's tons of evil Santa stories. There are stories, the ones that I like are that take something traditional about Christmas and redo it in a way that's completely unrecognizable. Those are really fun. One of the stories that won this year is taking a very traditional Christmas story and turning it into something really disturbing. So those are fun as well. But yeah, like I said, horror, science fiction, fantasy, everything about Christmas. But it's one of my favorite things, and definitely the show that gets the most listens. It was last year, and I bet it will this year too. So I was going to say, I said 15.
Cool.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I said 15 because there was one story that I did add at the last minute, because someone who's teaching at an international school in Japan sent me an email and said they'd stumbled on to the contest. And he teaches it's an English for foreign language students. I mean, obviously, he's in Japan, but he was trying to think of something that would, you know, at least motivated students to get a little bit involved in their homework. And he ended up giving this to them, and they started turning in some really creative stories. And he got in touch with me, and he's like, hey, could you just mention me on your site? You know, not even on the show, but just on your site, because maybe that'll motivate everybody to get things done. And I figured, sure. And it was almost time for the website, or for the contest deadline, to be up. So I just wrote a quick little blog post just about, hey, you guys have extra time. But then he sent it to me, and I ended up choosing one of those stories to read sort of like the winner of their class. And I figured, you know, that's the least I can do, especially since the stories were actually pretty good. I mean, crazy weird in some cases, partly because you're translating cultures and language. at the same time. But I thought that was pretty cool. You know, this random little thing that I did on a whim is out there, you know, halfway around the world and in somebody's English class. And you've now got these, you know, young high school students all writing weird Christmas stories. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it sounds like a take of Christmas a la Twilight Zone or The Outer Limits,
yeah,
or something like that. Yeah.
That's exactly right. Yep.
Neat. So how do you record and edit your episodes? What type of equipment do you use, or what type of software programs or anything like that do you use to create the show?
Yeah, I play fingerstyle guitar, so I really use my stuff that's made for guitar recording. I have a pretty good quality Zoom portable microphone, and I just use that now. It works just as well. I've played around with a friend's really expensive stuff, and I'll be honest, I couldn't tell the difference, especially not once I have to mix things together. So I figured I'll just stick with what I got. But I have that, and then just a small soundboard, and then I use Mixcraft. I use acoustic and Mixcraft. So I'm on a PC, but I know how to use Mixcraft, and so it's the easiest thing for me to do to get everything together. But yeah, I haven't actually spent a whole lot of money on it. I could get into the super geek side, but I figure I'm spending enough money right now on hosting the site and doing all that, and I still have kids. So once they move out of the house, then maybe I can upgrade the studio a little bit, but not till then.
Yeah, and you have to feed yourself and your family and all that too.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I got put clothes on their backs and stuff. Yeah,
yeah.
I get it. So, So this episode's releasing on the 18th of December. So how often are you releasing your episodes? Is it once or twice a week, or is it?
I try to do two a week during December, and that's more than I've done in the past. In the past, it's been just kind of what I could get to at that time, but I actually planned ahead this year. So far enough in advance, like from last January on, I've got things planned. So everything's pretty well done and in the can and ready to go. So yeah, two episodes a week. And then, like I said, after Christmas, or after New Year's, actually, then after New Year's, we'll see what Patreon does, and we'll see how that goes. And if the experiment goes well, then I'll keep doing one a month. And otherwise, the ones during December, from Thanksgiving to Christmas, will always be nice and free and available for everyone, two a week.
And are there specific days, or are they just?
I try to do Monday and Friday, but I usually don't make that. So.
So whenever it gets out, Tuesday, Saturday, whatever, Wednesday, Sunday, whatever. Yeah. So.
Yeah. I bank on the idea that most people with podcasts don't listen to them the minute they come out. So that's what I tell myself, at least, so that I can release.
Yeah,
them,
a lot of them,
you know,
are
when they're
are
finally
on
ready.
Demand and ready. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
So how would you say that podcasting has improved or changed your life?
I think getting in touch with people who do have those very niche interests. You know, I've been using that word a lot, but I do think that's important, that you can find people who are really into something that doesn't have a huge audience, and then to find out that there actually is media about it, or just to be able to get in touch with other people who follow that same thing. So like with the second podcast I mentioned, like the Gene Wolfe podcast, it's fun because when my partner and I, who do that one, put it out, we've been able to get in touch with so many fans who will tell us, you know, oh, we've, you know, I've been reading them forever, but I haven't found anyone who really talks about it in the way that I want to. And so I can listen to this, and I can come on the Facebook page, and we can chat now. And it's the fun part of it really is that little community that grows up around it. And you know, that's something you can only really do with, I feel like smaller shows. You know, if it got really big, then I don't know what to do. This is the first year with the Weird Christmas thing that it's so popular that I literally don't have time to respond to, you know, everybody who comments on a card on Twitter or Tumblr or something like that. Whereas in the past, it's still been manageable. But as it gets bigger, it's fun, it's great, but it's also a little frustrating that I feel like I'm, you know, I don't want to feel like, you know, somebody way behind the scenes just kind of making stuff. It's more fun when people will get in touch with me after a show and be like, oh, I like that. Or send me an email and hear one of the stories and say, hey, can you put me in touch with the person who wrote that? Because I've got a collection I think would be really great. You know, to be able to have those connections is much more fun to me. So that's one thing that I really like about podcasting is you can put together a show that's listenable and that, you know, is well done and organized, but still be part of a small group that's focused on a common interest that everybody shares. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, and the Christmas community is very, very, I don't want to say, I think they're a close-knit group of people who are, you know, crazy about Christmas, and there, you know, there are like hundreds of people. And you recently had a guest who went to a Christmas convention too. I didn't even know those things existed. You know.
Yeah, and you mentioned that there's a small group of Christmas podcasts that all came out. Well, not all of them, but a majority of them started between 3 and 4 years ago, oddly enough, for whatever reason, I'm not really sure. But we all kind of know each other, and so we'll help out with each other's shows and promote things. And there actually is a page called the Christmas Podcast Network where you can go. That's kind of like a clearinghouse of as many different, you know, Christmas podcast shows that we can find. And we try to upload the latest episodes on there. So if you want to, you know, get in touch with someone, or if you like one person's show, you can find out, you know, what's similar that's out there. But yeah, so there's that side, and that's just the podcasters. But like I said, too, then there's that group of the community of people who like Christmas music and, you know, are sharing their annual mixes with everybody every year. And that's just a fun group of people who all share, you know, a very weird obsession of just finding that unusual Christmas music. But they've got their community, and they know each other and support each other and are like, oh, I found some Hawaiian Christmas music record I've never seen before. Oh, I know that Mitchell likes that, so I'm going to send that over to him, and, you know, stuff like that all the time. It's fun.
Yeah, that's pretty neat. And communities like that are very supportive of one another, too. Podcasting as a whole is pretty supportive, but even like you said, the niche groups are even like stronger, and they're really tight. So,
yeah.
So, what would you say is the most challenging part about podcasting?
The time, just the time that it takes to actually do it well. I feel I probably worry about little tiny things that don't matter too much, but the time that it takes to. And especially since, like I mentioned, having a family, and, you know, there's a lot of late nights where, you know, I'll be worrying, trying to get, you know, sound to work. Like with the story podcast, it took me a ton of extra time because I had the authors of the stories read them and send it to me. Well, of course, everyone's going to have it on, you know, different media and different microphones or cell phone or whatever. And so trying to equalize all that so that it's listenable, that takes time. And so, you know, even once I have all the pieces together, I can't just slop it and put it out there, or else I'm not going to be happy with it. So the time it takes to do that after the kids are in bed and after I've actually spent time with my wife and, you know, worked all that kind of stuff, that's the biggest challenge. Yeah.
So besides the Christmas Podcast Network, are there any other resources that have helped you along the way?
That's the big one. There are various, you know, groups. Facebook and Reddit have a ton of podcast groups that are great to go help out if you have a specific question. And I feel like now there's so many of those kinds of things that you can easily find another community of people who are helpful. And already it's so easy just to walk into one and be like, hey, I have a new podcast. I've got like maybe 5 episodes. Can somebody listen and tell me what you think? And just say that, and immediately people will have listened to everything and be giving you feedback, but also you'll find people who want to hear more. So, yeah, I would say, you know, use social media. Just jump right in and don't be afraid and say you're making something, and people will give you helpful criticism all over the place. I've gotten a ton just from doing things like that.
Mm-hmm. So is there anything that you wish you had known when you started out?
Uh, You know, I'm going to say no. I think a lot of it you learn over time, and so messing up and trying things again is good. But I guess the one thing that I really do like about this is that failing and making mistakes doesn't have big drawback, I guess. Like, it's so easy to, if you mess up an episode and nobody likes it, take it down, put it back up there, right? I mean, if nobody's paying for it, then you're not really beholden to anyone, and they can't cancel your contract. You just, you make a better one next time. And that kind of freedom to make mistakes or to have really bad ones, but to do something better, you know, people aren't going to go back and say, hey, that episode you did 17 episodes ago, that was terrible, and so therefore I'm going to listen. I'm not going to listen anymore. I mean, that just doesn't happen, you know. So people are much more forgiving and open to see what new things you're going to try. So, yeah, I feel like it's the mistakes I made have been fine. I learned from them. So I'm
oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, I remember, you know, a couple of my first episodes, I went in like a belly flop, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, you learn from it, and you learn how every episode that you do, you learn to edit better, you learn to ask questions better, you learn to, you know, do everything better. So as it goes on, it, you know, increasingly gets better. I think for the most part, everyone has an episode in their catalog that they're not too, like, proud of, but, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's still there because
yeah.
they're not going to remove it because they spent all the time, you know, working on it. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, oh, well.
Yeah. So
are there any podcasts that you listen to regularly that are maybe not in the same niche as you?
A couple that I really like, Linoleum Knife, is a movie review podcast. You know, I say that although I just had one of the hosts on my show, so that's one reason why he's there, but Linoleum Knife is definitely one, that, I think that Alonzo Giralde and his husband just do a great job of having good casual conversations about movies, but also still have really, really good insights, to things. If I had to recommend one Christmas podcast, I know you said not in my niche, but if there was one that I'd recommend, there are so many good ones that we have to, but I think a great place to start is one called Christmas Past. Just probably, it has the benefit of a sort of starter Christmas podcast because it's short, but it's also super well produced. Brian Earle, the guy who makes it, does a great job of mixing a little nostalgia with really interesting Christmas history in there. I'm trying to think of the name, of the other one. There's a whole, group called Clay Temple Media that does a whole bunch of podcasts all about science fiction, fantasy, horror, and weird writers. They do one about Gene Wolfe, just the Gene Wolfe Literary Podcast that I'd really recommend, but they also have stuff about all kinds of different writers and genre shows, but just really intelligent stuff. I mean, they're both academics. I don't know if they're out of grad school yet or close to it, but so definitely with a kind of, you know, intellectuals approach to that stuff, but it's all really well done. So you could just look up Clay Temple Media. There are a ton of shows that those guys put out that are really good.
So is there any advice that you'd give to someone wanting to podcast or who had an interest in it?
Play around with an editor, see what you can do, and find a variety of ways to record things. That's what I would say, and experiment. I think that experimenting with the sound is probably the best thing that you can do, because you do hear a lot of podcasts that when they start, it's all, you know, the quality is just weird or the levels are all off. And that the trick about sound, I'm sure other people have said this too, but when we watch a video, we can be forgiving about bad video a lot of times and still watch. But if the sound's messed up, we'll immediately switch and turn it off, or if it's hard to hear. So when you have a podcast, then you only have sound. And if your sound is frustrating, then they're gonna immediately change. So experiment. And the one sort of insider tip I would give is that the thing that saved my life so many times is having a multi-track recorder when you're talking to other people. And if you can have each of them on a separate track so that they're editable on different tracks, it makes all kinds of things easier in your life. So that would be the mm-hmm. other tip I would give.
So, Craig,
yeah, I don't know how you and I are recording this right now. I don't know if we're it's all one track or if you got us going to separate tracks. So, but that's the one thing that I try to do all the time now. Yep.
So, how can people find your podcast on social media or your website, or how can they listen to it?
WeirdChristmas.com is the base for everything, and the podcast is on every app I could think of to make sure that it's out there. If you ever look for it on your favorite app and you don't find it, let me know. WeirdXmas@gmail.com. But yeah, WeirdChristmas.com, and then I've got links to the show and all the various social media things, which are all called Weird Christmas in one way or another, too.
Great. So, in closing, is there anything that I didn't ask that you'd like to talk about, or do you have any closing thoughts on anyone just discovering Weird Christmas?
You didn't ask if Santa Claus really did come from a hallucinogenic mushroom, which is the one question that everybody seems to want to ask me. It's probably the one podcast that has the most watched thing. In fact, I had to make a video out of it just because so many people would link to it. So, yeah, that's the one. But I guess we'll leave that up. So if anyone wants to know what's the connection between Santa and magic mushrooms, then there's an answer out there waiting for you.
I never really thought. I mean, I saw it on your website, but I really wasn't sure. So
it was funny. That was the question that more people would ask me, or they'd find. Speaking of podcasts, I think one reason is that Joe Rogan had a piece of that. I have a guy who was telling them that Santa Claus came from magic mushrooms, and it got out there because of him, I think. And after that, it's a theory that would show up in all kinds of strange places, and it just kind of became sort of part of the strange Christmas lore. So people started asking me, is that true, or what's that all about? So I definitely had to do a show about that one.
Well, I think everyone should listen to Weird Christmas, especially since it's heading up to Christmas, and, you know, who doesn't want to have something offbeat to make them less frustrated with the holiday season. So I appreciate you being on the show, Craig, and talking to me about your show.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that you're interested. It's sort of weird to be on the other side for once. So,
yeah.
But no, thank you so much for talking.
And thank you to everyone listening to your podcast or mine. We'll chat soon.